Amid Vavamid Aleph from the two dots at the 18th line. So the Mishnah said Umechasen es apiros, that one of the things one can do on Yontif is let's say you have this dirty water dripping off your gutter, it's gonna ruin your fruit, you can cover the fruit. So Amar Ula va'afilu avira delivne. Ula says that when the Mishnah says you can cover your fruit, it didn't only refer to fruit. Let's say you had a row of bricks, you had a wall, and there was this dirty water that was gonna ruin the wall, you can cover the bricks as well. However, Reb Yitzchak amar peros haruyin. Va'azda Reb Yitzchak letamei, da'amar Reb Yitzchak, ein kli nitel el ledavar hanitel b'shabbos. Reb Yitzchak disagrees and says that when the Mishnah spoke about covering fruit, it meant fruit. Not specifically fruit, but really anything which is not mukta on Shabbos or Yontif. That's what it meant. Whereas bricks, we know are mukta, they have no use on Shabbos or Yontif. So Reb Yitzchak would argue that one would not be allowed to cover the row of bricks to prevent them from being ruined. In contrast to fruit and things like that, that would be okay to cover. So the Gemara asks, Tanan mechasen es haperos bechilim, perusin avir delivne lo. The Mishnah says that you're only allowed to cover fruit. Doesn't that imply that it's only fruit, not rows of bricks? How could Ula say that it extends to even rows of bricks? So the Gemara says, no, hu adin da afilu avira delivne, va'aydi desana resha meshilin peros, tana sifanami mechasen es haperos. That's not an overwhelming question. The Gemara gives a textual answer. Since the first part of the Mishnah spoke about lowering fruit through the skyline on Yontif, so the Seifa gave a parallel case of covering fruit, but it didn't necessarily have to be a case of fruit only. Okay, then the Gemara says,
What's the tircha?
It's not an issue of tircha. According to Reb Yitzchak, it's a problem of mukta, because he holds that you're only allowed to cover something which you could otherwise use on Shabbos or Yontif. So fruit, you're allowed to use, you're allowed to eat, so it's not mukta. So if the fruit is in danger of being ruined, I'm allowed to cover it. But but bricks, I have no use for on Shabbos or Yontif, so according to Reb Yitzchak, I have no right to pick up a kli to cover it. Okay, so then the Gemara is,
The cover itself isn't mukta, it's the item.
No, but because I'm using it to protect a mukta item, Reb Yitzchak says that's a problem, yeah. Okay, so the Gemara says, Tanan.
I don't hold like.
Well, we'll see who we hold like. So the Gemara says, Tanan v'chin kade yayin v'chin kade shemen. The Mishnah said that one of the things that you're allowed to cover on Yontif, if it's in danger of being ruined from the dirty water, are jugs of wine and oil. So doesn't that seem to conform with Ula? Ula was the one who told us that, I'm sorry, doesn't that seem to conform with Reb Yitzchak, that it's specifically things that are usable, that are not mukta, so wine, oil, fruit, those types of things, whereas according to Ula, anything should be allowed to be covered. So the Gemara says, no, hacha b'maya skina b'tivla, when the Mishnah said you're allowed to cover jugs of wine and oil, it was talking about wine and oil which are tevel. So if it's tevel, so that already, you could say that's already a bigger chiddush. That would not be included in the regular case of perus. And in fact, the Gemara says, "Hachi nami mistabra di isal gadaita kadi yain v'chadi shemen dehetera hatana lereisha perus." The Gemara says, because if you're going to tell me that the Mishnah just meant regular wine and oil that wasn't tevel, why would the Mishnah have to spell that out? Why is that not included in perus? Perus presumably just means anything which is mutter, which is not mukta on Shabbos or Yontif. So the Gemara says, no, that's not true. Kadi yain v'chadi shemen it's shrichale. Sal gadaita chamina lehesim meruba chashashu lehesim. One could argue that it's not true, that maybe the Mishnah does refer to regular wine and oil that's not tevel. The chiddush of the Mishnah is that one might have argued that we only allow you to salvage something which would lead to a larger monetary loss, like wine and oil, but who says that a smaller monetary loss like fruit is permissible to cover? So no, kamash malan, that even a smaller monetary loss is permissible. So it doesn't necessarily prove that the Mishnah was talking about wine or oil which are tevel. In fact, if anything, it seems to be the opposite. Because if you remember the last few days we spoke about in the Gemara, that we assume that Tevel is actually not Mukta on Shabbos or Yontif, b'di'eved, because although there's an Isra Durabbanan to do Afreshes Trumas and Maisros on Shabbos and Yontif, we said in the Gemara earlier that b'di'eved, if you did it already, then it's going to be valid. So it actually turns out, if anything, that Tevel really is Dafka, not Mukta on Shabbos or Yontif. So this Gemara seems to actually bear that out. Okay, then the Gemara says, Tanan, nos linkli tachas adelef b'Shabbos. The Mishnah also told us that if let's say you have water dripping off of the ceiling or the roof or whatever, on Shabbos, and it's going to ruin the carpet, it's going to ruin the house, whatever it is, you're allowed to put a kli under the, in other words, you could put a bucket there to prevent it from ruining everything. So doesn't that seem to follow Ula? Because the water itself, the dirty water, has no use, and the fact that I'm allowed to catch the water in a bucket would seem to conform with Ula against Reb Yitzchak. So the Gemara says, no, that's not true. Bedelef haroi, maybe we're talking about a case where the water isn't dirty. Maybe the water that's dripping off the roof happens to be drinkable, even though it's usually not the case, but maybe the water is still fit. And that would still follow Reb Yitzchak Shita. Then the Gemara says, Tashma, person machatelas al gabi levenim b'shabbos. The Gemara Masecha Shabbos tells us that I can take a reed mat and I can use it to cover a row of bricks on Shabbos. How does that make any sense according to Reb Yitzchak? Again, remember, Reb Yitzchak was the one who said that you're only allowed to cover something which is not muktzah, but a row of bricks is certainly muktzah. So what's the justification for that? So the Gemara says, no. Di'iyatur mi binyana dechazilim is galayu. These particular bricks could have been left over from some sort of a construction site. Let's say they were in the middle of building a wall. They had a few bricks left over that they didn't use, and they decided to basically designate the bricks as some kind of a chair, some kind of a seat. So in that case, the bricks are actually not muktzah because you're using them for sitting. Then the Gemara says, Toshma, porsin machatzelas al gabi avanim b'shabbos. That same Gemara Masechet Shabbos also tells us I can take a reed mat and I can cover bricks and cover rocks on Shabbos. What usage do rocks have? There's certainly muktzah. Isn't that Gemara in Shabbos against Rabbi Yitzchak? The Gemara says, they're talking about rounded stones that were used as ancient forms of toilet paper. That's what they used to wipe themselves with, so they actually were not muktzah either. Then the Gemara says, Tashma, porsin machatzelos agabi kaveris devorim b'shabes b'chamim b'ne'achamu v'kshamim b'ne'akshamim uvilvad shelo yiskavim latzud. Another Gemara Masecha Shabbos tells us, I can take a reed mat and I can cover over a beehive because I want to, let's say either in the summertime I want to prevent it from overheating, the bees from getting too hot, or in the winter I want to prevent prevent the rain from coming in. The only thing you have to consider, says the Gemara in Masechet Shabbos, is that you have to make sure that you don't intend to violate the malacha of tzad, that you're not intending to trap the bees inside. If you intend to trap the bees, that's a malacha of tzad. If you don't intend it, so then it's a dover shein of miskavi. Now again, why is this not a psik ratio, we'll see in a second in the Gemara, but the bottom line is that you're allowed to cover the beehive to prevent, the elements from affecting the bees. The question is why? The beehive is muktzah. You have no use of there's no purpose to use a beehive on Shabbos or Yontif. So what function does it have? The fact that I'm allowed to cover the beehive, as long as I don't intend to trap the bees, that would seem to follow Ula, and that seems to be against Rabbi Yitzchak. So the Gemara says, no. Hasam nami di'ika devash. You could argue that the case is where there's honey in the beehive. So I do have a use for the beehive. It's not totally muktzah. I want to extract the honey and I want to eat it. So the Gemara says, Amar le Rav Ukva mimeshan le Ravashi, hatenach b'yemos hachama di'ika devash, b'yemos hakshamim ha'ika lememar. That answer only makes sense in the summertime when you actually have honey in the beehive to harvest. But in the wintertime when there is no honey in the beehive, so what justification do you have to cover the beehive to prevent the rain from getting in? There's no honey that you can access. So the Gemara says, no, lo nitzricha ela lo osan shtei chalos. The Chiddush is, the Gemara is teaching us that those two honeycombs that are inside of the beehive, that those are there the whole year, whether it's the winter or the summer, that's the Chiddush of the Gemara, that I'm allowed to protect the beehive from the rain, in other words, in order to salvage those two honeycombs. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Osan shtechalos muktosin. The two honeycombs in the beehive presumably are muktah. Most people didn't plan in advance to eat the two honeycombs in the beehive, so presumably they're muktah. So again, according to Rabbi Yitzchak, what right do you have to cover this beehive to salvage it, to protect it from the rain? So the Gemara says, no. Hacha b'mayaskin et shechashav aleim, avalo chashav aleim, my usher. In other words, the Gemara says, enachanami. The case is where you intended before Shabbos, or before Yontif, to eat the two honeycombs. But if you didn't do that, if you didn't specifically designate it beforehand, then Enachanami, the Gemara says, then it would in fact be usur to cover the beehive in the wintertime. So the Gemara says, but the problem is, Adesani uvilvad shelo yiskavin latzud, liflug velisne bididaba met dvar mamurim shechashav aleim, avalo chashav aleim usur. The problem is, asks the Gemara, that if we're talking about a case, in other words, if the guy did not designate the two honeycombs in advance, and that's why he's not allowed to cover the beehive, so the question is, why did the Gemara say that? The only factor, the only criteria that the Gemara presented that one needs to consider when covering the beehive is, make sure you don't intend to trap the bees. The only factor he mentioned was the issue of tzad. The question is, there's a much more basic problem here, which is that in this case, if I don't intend to designate it in advance, then the whole beehive is muktzah to begin with. Forget about the malacha of tzad. I can't use the beehive bichlal. So why did the Gemara mention that as a distinction? Why is it jumping to the malacha of tzad if fundamentally I can't use it at all? So the Gemara says, you're right. Hachi ka'amar. Afal pi shechishev alayan uvilvah shelo yiskavim latzud. The Gemara says, you're right, that even if I intended to use those two honeycombs, in other words, I planned in advance to use them, I still have to contend with this additional issue of the potential malacha of tzad. That's what the Gemara meant to say. So now the question is, b'mayo kimta k'reb Yehuda de'islei muktzeh ema seifa uvelvah shelo yiskavim latzud asan l'rebi shimon de'amar davar she'en miskavim mutter. The problem is that this Gemara Masechet Shabbos seems to be self-contradictory, because on the one hand, the very fact that we're even concerned about this issue of protecting the beehive and using the honeycombs is clearly a muktzah-oriented issue, but in other words, by definition. And as we know, as we spoke about hundreds of times already, only Rabbi Yehuda, for the most part, is concerned for Mukta. Rabbi Shimon, generally speaking, denies most of Hilchos Mukta. So clearly, the fact that this is even a Mukta issue is clearly following Rabbi Yehuda. The problem, however, is that when the Gemara then goes on in the very next line, Masechet Shabbos, and says, and by the way, when you're covering the beehive, make sure you plan not to trap the bees, well, that line would only make sense according to Rabbi Shimon, because Rabbi Shimon is the one who holds that a davar she'eino miskaven is mutter. According to Rabbi Yehuda, I could not intend to trap the bees, but I'm still going to violate the malacha of tzad if I trap them, because Rabbi Yehuda holds that a davar she'eino miskaven is usher. So the question is, how do you read this Gemara textually? The Gemara seems to be contradictory. It seems to be reflecting two different opinions. So the Gemara says, no. The Gemara says, v'sispera de Rabbi Shimon, v'habai v'rava damri travai, mo de Rabbi Shimon b'fsik reshe v'lo yomus. The Gemara says, well, hang on one second. Rabbi Shimon himself agrees that one would violate the malacha, let's say in this case of tzad, because it's a psik resha. When I'm covering the beehive with a reed mat, there's no two ways about it. I'm certainly trapping the bees. So the Gemara basically is asking, why are we so bothered with this question? Even Rav Shimon agrees that this is a psik resha, and therefore he would subscribe to the malacha of tzad in this case. To which the Gemara says, no. La olam kula Rabbi Yehuda. He v'hacha b'may askinan de ispe kave v'lo tema la Rabbi Yehuda uvelvad shelo yiskavim latzud ela ima uvelvad shelo yasena mitzuda. The Gemara says, really, this entire Gemara Masechet Shabbos reflects the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, and the case and the issue here is, says the Gemara, that there are these windows or little openings on the side of the beehive. So when I put the reed mat on top to protect the beehive from the elements, I'm not really trapping the bees because they have these little windows, these little holes on the side to be able to escape from. And the correct girsa in the Gemara is not that I have to make sure I'm not intending to trap the bees, because you're not trapping the bees. The issue is you have to intend to not make a trap in the first place. That's the issue. So then the next question, of course, is pshita. So the Gemara says, but then of course I don't violate the malacha of tzad. In other words, if I trap an animal but I leave a way for them to get out, that's not the malach of tzad. So what's the chiddush? Why is the Gemara telling me, oh, by the way, you know that you're not violating tzad here? Of course you're not violating the malach of tzad. The Gemara says, no. Ma'u desema b'mino nitzod aser shalom b'mino nitzod mutter kamash malan. One could have argued that the malach of tzad is not violated here at all, because bees are not the type of animal that you normally trap in the first place. Usually you're trapping birds, you're trapping wild animals, things like that. Bees are not a typical animal to trap, so one could have argued that there's not even a malach of tzad to contend with here in the first place. So Gemara teaches us otherwise, that it's not true that the malach of tzad does apply here, but again, as long as you have those windows on the side of the beehive, the openings, then the malach is not going to be relevant anyway. Then the Gemara says, Rav Ashi Amar, mi katane b'mos hacham uvimos hakshamim, Rav Ashi gives a completely different answer that circumvents all the issues that we had in the Gemara up until now, because up until now we were assuming that the case was that we're either dealing with the summer or the winter time, and we're putting the reed mat over the beehive to protect it from the elements. So we had this whole question, how could you do that in the winter? You don't have the honey. And then we said, because it's the honeycombs. And then we said, what about the issue of tzad and mukta? That was the whole back and forth we had in the Gemara until now. Rav Ashi says, the Gemara never says that you're covering the beehive with the reed mat in the summer or the winter, but rather it says you're doing it to protect from the sun and the rain. So that could be the fall or the spring. That could be the months of Nisan and Tishrei. It's not the summer or winter yet. In those cases, there's sun, there's rain, and there's also honey. So according to Rav Ashi, you can circumvent everything we just said in the Gemara by just simply saying, yeah, you're right. The case is the Gemara was specifically talking about the fall and the spring, Nisan and Tishrei, a time of year when there's sun, when there's rain, when there's honey, but maybe in a Hanami, if it's a time of year when there's no honey, as we noted earlier, like in the winter time, perhaps Rav Ashi would agree that it's completely usher to cover it because it's mukta. And again, you don't have to come on to all the different distinctions we gave earlier about the honeycombs and about mukta and about tzad. You could just say, yeah, maybe the Gemara just meant that in the fall and spring you're allowed to do this because there's honey there. Okay. Then the Mishnah said, "V'nosnin kli tachas hadalef b'Shabbos." The Mishnah told us that you're allowed to basically put a bucket underneath some water that's dripping from the roof, from the ceiling on Shabbos. Tana im nismali hakli shofich v'shona ve'eno nimna. Let's say the bucket starts to get starts to fill up. It's about to spill out, and you don't have any other buckets to use, so you're allowed to pour out the water and keep refilling, despite the fact that that water, as we noted earlier, is definitely mukta. No one's going to drink the water that's dripping off of the ceiling, but nonetheless, you're allowed to continuously empty the bucket and keep on allowing it to refill. Then the Gemara says, "Beirachia de Abaye Dalef." Abaye's mill, the millstones started to leak. Also, the Kamei de Rabba, so he went to Rabba, and again, this was happening on Shabbos or Yontif. So he came to Rabba and asked him what to do. Amar Leizil Ailu Lefuriach Lahasim him to Levi Kigrav Shoreva Apke. So Rabbah told him, bring your bed into the area of the millstone, and this way it's going to turn into what's called a Grav Shorei. We spoke about this back in Masechet Shabbos. A Grav Shorei basically just means something which is dirty, disgusting. It could be something like feces, urine. It could be just like a dead animal, something which is disgusting. So even though it's really objectively mukta, there's a heter to move Grav Shorei on Shabbos and Yantif. So he says, all you got to do is bring your bed into the area of the millstone, and then you'll be allowed to, you know, to move out the millstones by dint of the bed, and thereby you'll be able to salvage the bricks in the millstone, because otherwise they were going to dissolve because of the water. So the problem was, Yosef Abai v'kakashi levchi osin graf shorei lechachila. So Abai was pondering this answer of Rabbah. He says, but hang on one second, are you allowed to do that? The whole concept of a graf shorei means if I see something disgusting out in my house, I'm allowed to move it. But who says that I'm allowed to set up that situation lechachila? I'm allowed to bring my bed into the area where there's leak, where there's a leak, in order to create that scenario. Who says that that's okay? So the Gemara says, Adahachi nafa beirachya dabai. As Abai was pondering this issue, his whole millstone just collapsed. The whole thing just dissolved because of the water. So Amar, he said, Tisili da avrei ademar. He said, this is my punishment. This is my reward, my punishment, because I didn't listen to the words of Rabbah. Okay, then the Gemara says, Amar Shmuel, grav shel reiv avichel meimi raglai mutter lohut. Yeah.
I'm sorry, just in terms of the last case, so you just have to designate these vessels, or do you actually have to use them?
You're saying in which case? In the case where...
millstones.
You're saying in the case where Rabbah told Abaya to bring the bed into the area of the millstone?
Correct.
No, so meaning because once you have the bed there, it becomes a grav shorei, because now it's going to ruin your bed.
Even if they weren't used.
Exactly. So that would be the justification to then move out the bricks from the millstone, yeah. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amar Shmuel, grav shorei v'avit shel meimi raglayim mutter lahotzi al na'ashma, uchshehu machaziro, no sin bo mayim u machaziro. So the Gemara tells us that if I have, a bucket full of urine, of feces, whatever it is, I'm allowed to carry those out on Shabbos in order to dispose of them. Now the question is, when I bring back that bucket with that had the urine or feces, so I can't just, if I bring it back and it's still dirty, it's going to be mukta, so I have to basically clean it out. So I bring it back by pouring water into it. So the Gemara says, Savur mina grav shorei agav mana in b'thei atmelo. The implication of this Gemara seems to be that one is only permitted to carry a grav shorei, something which is dirty, disgusting, the feces, the urine, whatever it is, by dint of a kli. So you can carry the urine or feces in a bucket. But to carry it by hand, it sounds like from the Gemara that would be problematic. However, the Gemara says, not true. Tashma. There was a mouse that was hanging around in the spice area of Ravashi. Amar lehu Ravashi nakta bitzutzise v'apkua. So Ravashi said that he grabbed the mouse by the tail and he threw it out. So you see that a graf shorei, in certain cases, you don't only have to use a kli. In other words, he didn't take like a tray or a cup or whatever to get the mouse out. He actually picked it up by the tail and threw it out, and that was also okay. Okay, so the Mishnah says, Kol shechayoven ala mishum shvus, mishum rishus, mishum mitzvah v'shabes, chayoven ala b'yontif. The Mishnah now, this is going to really preface through the end of the Masechta. The Mishnah says that anything for which you're chayav mishum shvus, which shvus is usually a term we use to refer to dinei derabanan, rishus are just optional activities, mitzvah, again, obviously we know, so anything which falls under those categories which you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, you're also not allowed to do on yontif. So the Mishnah now has to define what these things are. The Elohim mishum shvus. The following things are asur midrabanan on Shabbos and by definition on Yontif as well. Lo olin b'ilum, you're not allowed to climb a tree. Again, the Gemara is going to explain the reasoning behind all these things. You can't climb a tree. Velo rochven agabi behema, you can't ride an animal. Velo shatin al panei amayim, you can't go swimming. Velo metapchin, velo mesapkin, velo meraktin, you can't clap your hands, slap your thighs, basically all forms of dancing. The Elohim Mishum Rishus. The following things are optional activities that are forbidden on Shabbos and Yantif. Lo Dunin, you can't adjudicate court cases. Velo Mekachin, you can't get married, you can't do Hakidushin. Velo Choltsin, Velo Miyabin, you can't do Chalitza or Yibum. The Elohim Mishum Mitzvah. The following mitzvah activities are forbidden on Shabbos and Yantif. Lo Magdishin, Velo Ma'arichin, Velo Macharimin, Velo Magvian Trumo Meiser. Again, you can't pledge to give something to Hektesh, you can't pledge to give the Erichin values. We spoke a lot about that back in Mesechus Erichin, right? To give someone's monetary value to the Mikdash, right? Machrimin is when you basically designate animals or property to Bedek HaBayis, to the upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash, or to the Kohanim. That's also us to do on Shabbos and Yontif. You can't give Trumos or Maestros on Shabbos and Yontif, as we know. So the Mishnah says, Kol Elu B'Yontif Amru Kal V'Chomer B'Shabbos Ein Ben Yontif L'Shabbos Ela Ochel Nefesh B'Vad. As we know, this is the famous Mishnah Maseches Megillah, that the only difference between Shabbos and Yontif is in terms of Ochel Nefesh, right? But aside from Ochel Nefesh, Shabbos and Yontif are basically identical in terms of what you're not allowed to do. So the Gemara says, Lo Olin B'Ilon Gzeres Shem Yislosh. What's their issue with climbing a tree? tree on Shabbos and Yantif. We know, of course, that the issue is you may come to pluck something off the tree. What's the issue with riding an animal on Shabbos or Yantif? The issue is you may come to walk with the animal, you know, beyond the confines of the tchum. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Does that mean to say that the issue, that the issur of tchumin, of not leaving the tchum on Shabbos or Yantif, is an issur to arise? So the only reason, the only way it would make sense to impose a gzera derabana to not ride an animal on Shabbos or Yantif is if tchumin would be deoraisa. We happen to pass that tchumin is only derabana. There is one sheet of the sheet of Rabbi Akiva who holds that tchumin is deoraisa. We don't pass in that way. So how could the justification to not ride an animal be based on tchumin? So the Gemara says, you're right. Alexera shema yachtoch zemora. Rather, the reason why you can't ride an animal is similar to not climbing a tree, because you may come to break off a twig in order to whip the animal. And the reason why you can't swim is because of this gzira, lest you come to build a raft while you're in the ocean. We said you can't clap, you can't slap your thighs, you can't dance. So again, famously, the Gemara says gzira shema yasakin klei shir. It's because we're afraid that if you start to dance, to clap, etc., you may come to fix musical instruments. And again, whether all these gziras apply today, you know, there's a whole discussion in the Rishonim about exactly if these should apply today, whether they should, you know, whether we should do away with these. That's kind of a discussion for a different time. Fine. Then the Mishnah says, "Ve'ilu heim yishur rishus lo dan." And the first thing the Mishnah said that was included in the category of rishus that was usher on Shabbos and Yantif is that you can't adjudicate court cases. So the Gemara says, "What do you mean? V'ha mitzvah ka'avet? Adjudicating a court case is a mitzvah, right? There's a mitzvah to have law and order, to have a court case, to have a functional society. Why does the Mishnah only refer to that as a rishus?" So the Gemara says, "No, lo tzricha diika da'adif mine. The case is where there's someone better than you, someone more qualified than you to adjudicate the case. So in that case, it's simply a rishus. If you are the most qualified, then Anachanami, it would be a mitzvah not just a rishus. And then we said, for lo mekachin, you can't get married. Ivaha mitzvah kavet, isn't marriage a mitzvah? Which is also a big assumption, whether that's even true. That's a big machlokas between the Rambam and the Rush, whether marriage is a mitzvah or just a hechsher mitzvah. So the Gemara says, no, lo tzricha teyisle ishovan. And the guy already had a wife, the guy already has kids, for either from a previous marriage, whatever it is. So therefore, in this case, for him, marriage, the second marriage or the subsequent marriage would not be a mitzvah, it would simply be a rishus.